Today is Thursday, June 13th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up, we get an update on the protests that have rocked Hong Kong.
They've closed the legislature today, and it will be closed again tomorrow. So they're just delaying it as much as possible.
Also ahead, two tankers have been attacked in the Gulf of Oman, and Japan's military joins Australian forces in training. It's all on today's International Edition. Our top story today, two petroleum product tankers were damaged in attacks in the Gulf of Oman. Norwegian maritime officials say three explosions were reported on the Norwegian-owned tanker Front Altair after a suspected attack on the Kokuka Courageous, a German-managed tanker. The U.S. Navy's Bahrain-based U.S. Fifth Fleet said it provided assistance after receiving distress calls from both tankers about an hour apart. Iran's state-run IRNA News Agency reported Iran's Navy rescued 44 crew members from the tankers and that both vessels were on fire. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb is on the line with us now to give us the latest on this story from the U.S. Department of Defense. Hello, Carla.
Hello. Yes, you are correct. Iranians are in custody of the Front Altair ship's crew. The USS Bainbridge actually responded to the distress calls that were made at around 6 o'clock a.m. and 7 a.m. local Bahrain time. They were closest to the Kokuka Courageous ship, and they have the crew's 21 members in custody there. The United States stresses that these two ships were on international waters in the Gulf of Oman when they were attacked, and a defense official has told me, based on condition of anonymity, he has said that we have indications that this attack was Iran. And when I asked him, I pressed him, I said, what do you mean by indications? And he said, we're confident and there is evidence available.
Also, what is the White House? Have they given any statement at this point?
No statement from the White House at this time. I'm sure that the U.S. is still trying to look into this. We had word from the Pentagon just a couple of days ago. General Frank McKenzie stressed that the threats are still imminent, and as we can see with this attack that just occurred, there are clearly threats in the region. He said that this is a mosaic of threats from Iran that has been ongoing for several weeks now. If you recall, there was an attack on four oil tankers that were at UAE. The United States said that Iran was responsible, particularly their Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps was directly responsible for this attack. And the United States has also said that Iranian-backed proxy forces carried out a rocket attack in Baghdad's Green Zone last month and an attack on a Saudi oil pipeline. However, the United States military has not declassified the evidence pointing to Iran. So the reporters here in this building at the Pentagon are pressing them to declassify some of this evidence to show the international community and the American public.
Good. So was there any explanation of what type of weapon was used?
Not at this time. We're still getting details. I know that a couple of people online have referred to the attack as having the ships being torpedoed. We still do not know. But in response, you know, the United States has been stepping up its presence in the region. And once we find out what actually carried out the attack, it'll be interesting to see if the U.S. puts in even more forces.
Okay, great. That's VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb giving us the latest situation on this story. Thank you, Carla. Well, a semblance of normalcy returned to Hong Kong today after clashes between police and protesters who oppose a controversial extradition bill that would allow criminal suspects to be sent to mainland China for a trial. Yesterday, thousands of activists managed to shut down government headquarters and the Legislative Council on the day it was to debate the extradition bill. Officers wearing helmets and carrying shields fired tear gas, rubber bullets, and pepper spray to push back protesters. Hospital authorities say at least 72 people were injured. The demonstrations forced the legislature to postpone Wednesday's session. Hong Kong is a semi-autonomous territory of China and maintains its Western-style court system and freedom of press and assembly. Many residents, however, fear the proposed law and other changes that Beijing backs are eroding those freedoms. Hong Kong's chief executive, Carrie Lam, has indicated that she will not back down on passage of the extradition bill, which the government says is needed to bring criminals to justice. Journalist Erin Hale has been covering the story. She spoke with my colleague, Kate Pound Dawson, on the day's events.
Early this morning, the protests really wrapped up for the day. There was very intense rain, and I think people were very tired. So when I got to the area around, 8 or 9 a.m., where there had been huge protests just last night, most people were gone. And there were some people who were still there cleaning up, boxes, taking supplies back. They didn't say that the protests were over, but they said they were just, going to regroup. The protests aren't officially, yesterday's weren't officially organized, but sort of an unofficial organizer, Civil Human Rights Front, has said that there will be a march on Sunday. So things will definitely continue.
Now, what is expected next from the government?
So the government, it's unclear. They've closed the legislature today, and it will be closed again tomorrow. So they're just delaying it as much as possible. Carrie Lam yesterday did speak to the people of Hong Kong through a Facebook video, and she did go on TV, and she basically chastised them for protesting, and I think continues to push the line that they don't understand what this law is. So I do not think she's going to back down. The vote is still officially set for June 20th, but it's possible that will get delayed. They have until mid-early July, when the legislature usually goes on summer recess. So they could possibly just keep pushing it back, because they have set about 66 hours for debate officially, or they did before the protests happened, and it's unclear if they're still planning to do that, because the bill hasn't passed its second reading yet, so it needs to do that to continue.
Okay. Now, what has China said about all of this?
China has said previously, I think yesterday, that this is an internal matter and has asked for foreign countries to stay out of it. Today, they were very critical of some comments by the European Union that, basically so that the EU still had concerns about the extradition bill and urged Hong Kong to respect the right of protesters. In the state media, they've really emphasized the violence of the protests, and they made them sound, a lot more like riots and hoodlums. And they've also really been pushing this line that there's a protest online right now with 900,000 people's signatures saying that they support the extradition bill, but it's unclear if that petition is reliable.
That was reporter Erin Hale in Hong Kong speaking with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson. Well, in the United States, Democrats are expressing alarm after U.S. President Donald Trump dismissed concerns about accepting information about electoral opponents from foreign powers. He said such activity would not amount to interference in the U.S. political system and that members of Congress all do it. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, a Democrat, said those comments put Trump one step away from dictators and autocrats who manipulate elections to stay in power. Sagar Magani with the Associated Press has more.
The president said in an exclusive interview with ABC News' George Stephanopoulos that if offered dirt on a 2020 opponent,
I think I'd want to hear it.
And while he might report it to the FBI, he'd be under no obligation. Democratic contenders are blasting that, with Joe Biden calling it a threat to national security. This morning, the president tweets he talks with foreign governments every day about everything, writing, "Should I immediately call the FBI? How ridiculous." He adds, "I'd never be trusted again." Sagar Magani, Washington.
Even some of Trump's fellow Republicans today expressed some concern about his comments. Republican and Trump ally Senator Lindsey Graham called the president's comments wrong and a mistake.
If a public official is approached by a foreign government offering anything of value, the answer is no, whether it be money, opposition, research.
During the 2016 election campaign, the president's son, Donald Trump Jr., met with a Russian lawyer who offered negative information about Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton. The FBI director has said that contact should have been reported to the agency, although the president disagreed. In response to the U.S. intelligence community's assessment that Russia attempted to influence the 2016 elections to damage Clinton's chances, the FBI launched its own campaign to combat foreign influence. The agency has encouraged election officials and campaign staff to report suspicious activity to the agency. Among the top stories in the world, a suicide bomb blast kills 8 people at a police checkpoint in eastern Afghanistan. The U.S. Secretary of State pushes for more market access in India for American companies. And the U.S. joins efforts to salvage an agreement between Sudan's military council and pro-democracy activists. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA's International Edition. The International Labor Organization is calling for the elimination of child labor, which victimizes hundreds of millions of children in all regions of the world. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva, where special events marking the World Day Against Child Labor Wednesday were held.
Children as young as 5 are among the 152 million victims of child labor. Many of them work long hours for little or no pay under abusive, slave-like conditions. The International Labor Organization reports nearly half of them work in hazardous child labor, which exposes them to unhealthy and dangerous conditions. It says the majority work in agriculture. Other areas of hazardous work include mining, construction, fishing, and domestic service. Beata Andreas is chief of the ILO's Fundamental Principles and Rights at Work branch. She tells VOA children trapped in the worst forms of child labor, such as debt bondage and prostitution, suffer irreparable physical and psychological harm.
According to the ILO's standards, the worst forms include child labor that is hazardous or damaging for the child's development, including their moral well-being. It also includes forced child labor or child trafficking, as well as the recruitment of children for armed conflict.
Andrea says some remarkable progress has been made in reducing child labor in Asia and Latin America, but reductions in Africa are declining. She says Africa now has the highest prevalence of child labor in the world.
This is not necessarily linked to a lack of action, but it is also linked to demographic development, migration, climate change, underlying economic root causes which play out differently in the different regions.
Despite this worrying trend, Andrea says she is heartened to see the African Union taking decisive measures to tackle this problem. She notes the AU is developing a 10-year action plan to accelerate the elimination of child labor in line with the UN's Sustainable Development Goals. The SDGs call for the elimination of child labor by 2025. However, if the current pace of reductions in child labor is maintained, Andreas warns, this mark will be missed by a wide margin. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is VOA's International Edition.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
Algeria's Supreme Court today ordered former Prime Minister Abdelmalek Sellal held in jail over allegations of corruption. Yesterday, the same court ordered former Prime Minister Ahmed Ouyahia to be held in custody over a corruption investigation, sending some Algerians onto the streets in celebration. William Lawrence, professor of political science at George Washington University and an expert on North Africa, spoke with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawy about corruption and the political stalemate in Algeria.
Well, this was a major demand of the crowd, so it's normal that they would celebrate. But certainly this does not mean that the crowds are happy with how the regime is handling the situation overall. And the reason why the regime is arresting businessmen, arresting former officials, and others accused of corruption is in order to please the crowd while they are not conceding other demands. And so a lot of what's going on here is a game whereby the regime is going to try to do the minimum it can do to sort of maintain some support of the crowd, and the crowd is going to accept each success as a step in the right direction, but they probably won't return to their homes and stop protesting just because of these arrests.
Army Chief Ahmed Qaed Salah has urged the crowds for a constructive dialogue, but the Algerian protesters are now seeking the departure of interim President Abdelkader bin Salah and the Prime Minister Noureddine Badawi, both seen as part of the elite that has ruled the North African country since independence from France in 1962. Do you see any room for any compromise?
Yes, certainly from the beginning. What the crowd wants is perfectly reasonable. They want elections within the context of a new sort of constitutional arrangement and election body that will be able to hold free and fair elections. And they want a national dialogue, you know, leading to a new constitution. I mean, these are normal demands in such a situation, whereas what the regime is trying to do is stay within the narrow confines of the former constitution and hold elections with a 90-day delays, even if the mechanisms and the institutions aren't in place in a way that satisfies the crowd. But this is all negotiable. What's particularly interesting lately is that Gaid Salah has not been giving his weekly addresses. He had been giving weekly addresses since February, and during May, he stopped giving them, and there's been a drop in popularity. So what will be interesting going forward is the degree to which the military can remain more or less in the good graces of the protesting crowd, rather than them just focusing their anger at the officials associated with the former president.
Algerian authorities have postponed presidential elections previously planned for July 4th, citing a lack of candidates. No new date has been set for that vote. What's the next step in such a political stalemate in Algeria?
Well, that's hard to know because, to quote some of the leading analysts of Algeria that I know, the regime is improvising. And so nothing here seems to have strategic objective behind it. It seems like they sort of see what's possible within the moment and sort of go week to week in an ad hoc sort of way. And that does not bode well for holding elections in a way that works with the crowd. As the major opposition organizations have outlined, it's very clear what they want. They want to hold elections further in the future after the current officials leave. And so the question is, who will be running the country in the interim while they do this longer, cleaner process? And certainly they don't want the current officials in place. They seem to be okay with the army as long as they put in interim officials. As some analysts have been saying, what that probably means is they should bring back some officials involved, for example, with the democratic transition of 1989 to 1991, who are seen as cleaner by the population. They have to bring in new faces to govern Algeria in the interim rather than officials left over from the regime deemed as corrupt by most of the population.
That was William Lawrence speaking with my colleague Muhammad Elshinawi about curbing corruption. Well, for the first time, a Japanese Navy ship will take part in joint military exercises in Australian waters. Analysts say it is a sign of growing defense ties between the Asia-Pacific partners. Last week, the Australian government was criticized for not giving advance notice of a visit by Chinese warships to Sydney. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Every 2 years, the Australian and United States military take part in Exercise Talisman Sabre. The war games are mostly conducted across northern and eastern Australia. This year, defence forces from New Zealand, Canada and Britain will participate. For the first time, the Japanese Navy will also be involved in manoeuvres that are designed to foster greater defence cooperation and integration among the Allies. Australia and the United States have a military accord dating back to the 1950s, and increasingly, the two nations have sought greater military ties with Tokyo, a former World War II enemy. Dr. John Lee is from the United States Studies Center in Sydney.
You're seeing far greater strategic military defense and intelligence cooperation between these three countries. You can also bet that there'll be far more public support for Japanese warships and exercises with Japanese warships compared to the situation when Chinese PLA ships appeared suddenly in Sydney.
The Australian government was criticised for not announcing in advance that three Chinese warships would be sailing into Sydney Harbour earlier this month on a pre-planned four-day stopover. Analysts say Chinese authorities would be monitoring this month's Exercise Talisman Sabre carefully. Most of the drills that run from late June to early August will take place in the Shoalwater Bay Military Training Area and surrounding forests near Rockhampton in central Queensland. The simulated battles will involve up to 25,000 military personnel operating at sea, on land and in the skies. Australian officials say the relationship with Japan is its most mature in Asia, that's underpinned by a shared commitment to democracy, human rights and the rule of law, as well as common approaches to international security. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Uganda has repatriated five people exposed to Ebola to neighboring DRC for better treatment. They are part of the family that crossed into Uganda's Kasese district from the DRC. They brought the first confirmed Ebola cases outside the DRC. Two members of the family, a five-year-old boy and his grandmother, have died. A three-year-old child is ill. Officials from Uganda's health ministry and the Beni Ebola response team from the DRC agreed that the DRC is better equipped to handle the five patients. The eastern DRC has been fighting an Ebola outbreak since last August. Uganda's health minister says no Ebola patient will be forced to return to the DRC. The health ministry also says there are no other confirmed cases of Ebola in Uganda right now, but three suspected cases are not related to the repatriated family remain under isolation awaiting test results. The Ugandan government today banned public gatherings in Kasese to reduce transmission risks. You've been listening to VOA's International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, and our engineer, Justin Thwaites. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
Need a little straight talk? Want to make sense of the world around you? Ask a question. Hear what others have to say? If so, Voice of America has a variety of talk shows for you. Lifestyle, health, politics, youth, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, TV, or the internet. They examine a wide variety of issues and world events not always covered by other media. VOA,